Last night we had a deacon with music. Today we have no deacon and just me singing, so you're stuck with me. I don't know how many of you have been to the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception here. Anybody been there? That should be on your bucket list if you ever go back east, because it's really interesting. I saw that in 1979. I was there just coincidentally when the Pope was in Washington, D.C., John Paul II. That was very interesting to see also. My aunt used to live in Maryland, and in the crypt of the basilica are 60 niches with all kinds of shrines of all the different titles of the Virgin Mary and a bunch of others as well. It was mostly unfinished way back then, 30 years ago. So it'd be interesting to go back and see it again. And it reminds us that the country is dedicated to the Immaculate Conception, and that things are not always the way they seem, and that prayers are indeed very effective in assisting nations. So today's feast is one that is always confusing, I think, for a lot of Catholics. I've said this before, but I always think of this at this feast day. My first year as a priest, I was at St. Matthew in Hillsborough. We had a school mass, which I did every other one, and I miss those school masses very much. I'm glad I don't have any school board meetings to go to, however. You know, so there's some advantages in having not a school, because we send them out to all the neighboring schools. But anyway, my first mass, I did the Immaculate Conception mass with the kids, and I did the usual question and answer thing that you do with kids, and my first question was, so who can tell me what the Immaculate Conception is? Well, the first answer I got, I changed the subject right away with the kids. You know, I never asked that question again. I'm afraid to ask it here because people don't, I won't get that kind of an answer. You know, a lot of people think it's about the conception of Jesus, but the feast is all about Jesus. But this is actually the conception of Mary. One of the interesting things that I did not notice until a couple of years ago, this is after all the education I had, was that we, for example, this is all about Mary's conception. Now, what happens in the liturgical year exactly 9 months after today? Some of you know this and most of you don't. The birthday of Mary. 9 months, get it? Okay. Today's the Immaculate Conception. 9 months later, we celebrate the birthday of Mary, September 8th. In this reading, the angel Gabriel tells Mary that Elizabeth has conceived a son in her old age, and this was 3 months ago. So 6 months later, we have the birth of John the Baptist. The Annunciation is the 25th of March, and 9 months later, we have Christmas Day, the birth of Jesus. So now you understand three birthdays on the liturgical year, right? There'll be a quiz after Mass. It's funny, I've been a Catholic all my life. I didn't realize that two of those, I knew the connection between the Annunciation. Well, this is really a feast of Jesus. And I say that because people wonder, why is this important, this feast? Why is it so critically important? And the reason is, it's all about the nature of Christ. When you think about it, it's critically important that we understand who was born of the Virgin Mary. And did Mary give birth only to his human self? And this is very critical, because if she only gave birth to the human self, then there are really two Christs, and that's a heresy of the early church. And the church had to figure out, how could it be possible for Mary to have given birth to both Jesus, the human flesh, and Jesus, the Son of God? Were there really two of them in one body, for example? It sounds ridiculous. But, of course, the Orthodox teaching held by all Christian faiths is that there are two natures, but one person, that there was what's called the hypostatic union. And, of course, Mary, his Godhead was not put together in her womb, in the sense that Jesus preexisted before all time. He created the Virgin Mary. But when Jesus was conceived, the two were fused together and will never be unfused for all eternity. So she gave birth to both. This is Orthodox teaching. I think we all believe this, even if we don't fully understand how that's possible. But then we ourselves are a fusion of spirit and body, not like Jesus, but our soul lives forever. And there's something beyond the human person on earth that is unquantifiable. And so we too are a mystery in a sense like this. The question that bothered and the church pondered for centuries and centuries was not that there was an immaculate conception, but the nature of how it was possible that Mary could give birth to the sinless Son of God. We know that from the first reading, and in fact from human experience, that we are all born with a tendency to sin. I see this in kids, you know, the minute they come, even begin to become self-aware, they begin to go like a shopping cart. They want to go off and they're testing the boundaries and all the rest of it, because we are by nature people that don't always follow the rules, you know. It's just human nature. It's passed down from mother and father to child throughout history. How could Mary not have passed down this human plague that we have of committing sin to God, his Son, which by definition cannot sin? And the answer is actually in the opening prayer here, in these very theological prayers that we have now. As you preserved her from every stain of sin by virtue of the death of your Son, which you foresaw. So Mary is preserved from original sin. She is, as she is conceived, God, this is the teaching of the church that was pondered over the centuries. Though we believed in the Immaculate Conception, the theology took a while to develop. That as she was born, God foresaw the yes that she would have in this reading, the birth and death of his Son, and the saving grace that would apply to all humanity, and applied it to her in advance, so that she too could be saved by the Son that she was going to carry. Because God is outside of time, and he can do this. It's the only way it was possible. We also are sanctified by Christ's blood, but we do it in time. And going forward, it's applied to us from the past into the future, because God is present to all of us. So that's a very critical point. And the church offers that to us as a means of reflecting on who the Son of God is in our lives, of how important it is in our faith and our belief. So Mary was preserved from passing on to Jesus that which we all struggle with, but she was not preserved from suffering the results of sins. She was not preserved from temptation, neither was Jesus. She had the grace to resist the temptations, though, like Jesus did, though she was not God. She was given those graces. We at death and in the beginning of the next world are preserved from the ability to make a choice that is not God. That's something that God gives us. But until that time, we have to struggle. So in this feast day, then, Mary offers us her Son Jesus. They exist in the present, they exist in the past, and even more importantly, they exist in the future. They call us from the future, and they say no matter what the trials of the present era are, they pale in comparison with that which is to come. That God is equally preparing us for our future as he prepared Mary for hers. She needed special graces at her birth, at her conception. But we too receive many graces, even in the womb. Even God carefully prepares that time and place where we are to be born, because we all have a mission. I think we don't realize that, but we will see that God has had a plan for each of us, just like he did for the Virgin Mary. Maybe not as exalted as that, but nevertheless equally important to the people around us. So really, when you think about it, all these feasts are really feasts for ourselves. They help us to gain insight about the mysteries of God and the mysteries of our own lives.